Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Hello, this is Pete. I am one of the content producers here at Ethical Property Partners. As well as a podcast, we have our YouTube channel. And one thing that's been working brilliantly over there are our Sophisticated Saturdays. Now, this episode includes audio from a Sophisticated Saturday show where you'll hear about a deal that Frank has recently done. In the first part, you'll get all the numbers, so if you want to take part and work out how you'd do the deal, you can grab a calculator and make some notes before listening to the second part, where Frank will tell you exactly how he structured the deal in a sophisticated way. The third and final part is exclusive to you as a podcast listener, where Frank gets grilled by an expert investor and chats about the deal in more detail. So over to Frank.
Hey there, guys. I would like to welcome you to this Sophisticated Saturday episode where I share with you a real life deal that we have done. We've already offered on it, or we've already monetized it. This one's from a few years ago, actually. And those of you that follow me, you might have heard me talk about our hotel that we have in the Midlands. In fact, we're about to potentially buy a second hotel. But this particular hotel, I'm not going to do the numbers. Normally I do the numbers on these kind of episodes, and you can work out the pros and cons and work out the actual numbers, etc. The vendor of this hotel was in his late 70s. He sadly passed away now. He lived 4+ hours away from the hotel and wanted to be done with having to visit it once a month. He and his wife used to drive there, walk around it. It was very run down. It wasn't operating as a hotel. In fact, he'd been operating it as a HMO. One of his guests stroke tenants had been applying for housing benefit. The council had got in touch with him and said, you really shouldn't be having tenants in your hotel. You don't have a license, neither do you have planning permission. You need to stop. So what he did was he reduced the number of tenants in his hotel to 4. The planning people weren't going to take action because it was 4 people, and the licensing people at the time were okay with him having 4 people in there because it wasn't going to 5 over 2 stories. Those were the old HMO licensing rules. So everyone was happy apart from the landlord, the owner. This landlord now only had income from 4 tenants. So it was like £1,000 a month or something. It was an 18 bed hotel. We've now added 10 more bedrooms to it. And so he was losing money on it. He did have a full-time caretaker that lived there. He kind of lived there free and got a bit of money each month. It was very tired, very run down. He was driving there with his wife once a month. He just wanted done with it. But he wanted above market value for it. He had 3 children and he guaranteed them X amount of money each when he sold the hotel. And so my question to you is, how would you do this deal? So he wants above market value. It was valued at, I seem to remember it was valued at around £300,000, something like that. Maybe 350 actually, £350,000. He wants 450. Now I'm not gonna do all the numbers as I promised, but he wants significantly more than it's worth. It's unencumbered, so no lending on it, but he's had issues with licensing, he's had issues with planning. What would you do? What would you do in that instance? How could you do that deal? Now that hotel had been on the market for 2 years and had failed at auction twice. So what would you do in that situation? What questions would you ask the vendor? Remember, we're always coming from what questions would you ask? And secondly, how would you structure it? Now, that deal has been going for about 5 years. So it's been making us money for that period of time. It's working well. So how would you structure it?
This is the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast. To see more about our Sophisticated Saturdays, just search YouTube for Ethical Property Partners.
Welcome back, guys. How did we structure this deal? Well, the first question is, how did you structure it? What did you do with the vendor in terms of what questions did you ask, and how did you control the property? Obviously, it's a control now, pay later deal because you're not going to be able to pay above market value now. That's what we did. We did a control now, pay later. It doesn't matter if we did it on a lease option or an exchange of contracts. It makes no odds whatsoever. But we controlled it. We had a definite purchase, a legally binding purchase in the future, legally binding on us, legally binding on the vendor. Willable, very important, because obviously he has now passed away. So very important that his heirs are still tied into the agreement. We've added 10 bedrooms, remember, so it's cost us quite a lot of money. But how did you monetize it? So we guaranteed him far more than he was receiving a month. We actually guaranteed him £2,500 a month. And so how did we do that if the property could only have four tenants in it? I'm not in the business of running hotels with receptionists and all of that. We didn't want to have a swimming pool. We didn't want to run the bar. We didn't want to do all of the normal stuff that a hotel has. That's not really my business. My business is property. And so what we did is we turned it into a boutique budget hotel. Now, we took legal advice on this. We guaranteed him his £2,500 a month. He was over the moon because he doesn't have to go and stay at the property, doesn't have to go and visit the property every month. And he's earning 2.5 times what he was before. Plus, he's not got any of the expenses. He was actually losing money on it. So now he's making a profit on it and he could forget about it. And I bet his family, his heirs, are really pleased because we're looking after it for them. They're not having to worry about compliance, tenants, etc. So what we've done with it as a boutique budget hotel is people can come and stay in it for the same price as it would cost them in a HMO. They can stay for up to a month. That was the legal advice we received, that so long as it isn't someone's principal primary residence, so long as they're not using it as their main address, they don't receive post there, they don't actually register with a doctor while they're there, they don't apply for housing benefit while they're there, etc., then it's not a residence, it's not residential. So it's not C4 planning, which is HMO planning, nor sui generis HMO planning, and it's a hotel. Now, there's no actual definition, no legal definition of a hotel. And we've been to planning committees, and one of the planners actually said, it's just the same as the Colonel in Forty Towers. That was the actual example they used in the planning committee, when, because we've now applied for planning permission for a HMO and been granted it. But for the last few years, we've had a bit of a ding-dong with the council. We knew we were going to have this because they had a go at the landlord previously and the landlord backed down, so that made them feel all brazen about it. And of course, once we filled the hotel very quickly with guests, remember, they're guests, not tenants, none of them stayed for more than 28 days because we didn't want it to have the appearance that they were living there. But there was such a ready stream of people willing to pay such a low amount. And of course, some people came for a weekend, some people the irony was, at the same time that the council were having a go at us for it being a HMO, we found out that one of the council workers was staying as a guest in the hotel, which made us laugh. But basically, we have filled the hotel. We've had to spend a bit of money on legals. We went and got what's called council's opinion from one of the top HMO barristers in the country so that we could quote from that when sitting down with this local council. And of course, you might say, oh, is it worth the hassle? Well, for me, yes. We've made several thousand pounds every single month for best part of 5 years. It's a 15-year agreement, so we've got another 10 years. And we've now added 10 more bedrooms. We've now got planning permission for converting it from a hotel into a HMO. We don't have to do that, but we now have planning permission. And we're now going through license application for licensing it as a HMO for the whole 28 bedrooms, the original 18 plus the 10 that we've added. So we will get to the point where if we choose to, we don't have to, just because we've got planning permission doesn't, for change of use, doesn't mean we have to, but we could now choose to operate this building once it's licensed. We're a couple of weeks away from getting the final approval on the license. We could operate it as a HMO, which would mean that instead of having guests that leave every week or every 28 days, they could actually stay there permanently. They could apply for housing benefit. They could register for doctors, etc. All the things you do when you live somewhere. If you're thinking of doing this, you definitely need good legal advice. You don't want to fall foul of licensing rules, because that's a criminal offence. You don't want to contravene any planning regulations, because they can come down on you like a ton of bricks and make you stop using the property in that manner. But the other thing that they claimed, and this wasn't anything to do with it at all, is there were shared kitchens. So I think we had five kitchens between the 18 rooms. They said, well, a hotel can't possibly be self-catering. And so we changed the description of it. We changed the description from a boutique budget hotel to a boutique self-catering budget hotel. And of course, it's cheaper for people if they don't have to sit in a restaurant and buy food from your restaurant. If they can go into these little kitchens, so it's like one kitchen between four or five rooms, and make themselves a meal, it obviously saved them money, and they were pleased about that. So I guess my message on this, guys, and I didn't really expect you to solve it in this way. Maybe you came up with this solution, in which case, congratulations. Maybe you came up with another solution. Let us know in the comments. But I think the message, the principle behind this is, just because someone hasn't been able to do something in the past, just because the powers that be have bullied them into a less profitable business model, doesn't mean that you can't solve it. Doesn't mean that you can't go do it in a better way, with better legal advice, with better power team members on board. You can't have a fantastic business, a really profitable investment, where others have failed. Mr. Ian Jackson, how are you today, sir?
I'm keeping great.
Thank you for joining us for this Sophisticated Saturday follow-up interview. So the idea behind this is you've listened to the episode where I've described the deal, and this is your opportunity to ask me all the difficult questions, all the easy questions maybe, that our audience might be thinking but haven't had the opportunity to ask me. Now, you're a sophisticated investor yourself, done over 360 transactions. You run EPP in Ireland. You know your stuff. But what jumped out at you, mate, in terms of what would you like me to expand on? What questions have you got about this particular deal? Over to you.
The first big thing comes to me is you paid $100,000 over market value. That's a very significant amount. That's 30% more than the property is worth. How would you ever get a Rick's valuation on that?
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? So most people would run a mile and it had been on the market for 2 years. So that proves it failed at auction twice, this particular property, because the asking price was $450 and it was worth about $350, something like that. Amazingly, it actually had planning permission for 9 houses on it. But by the time you bought it for $450, demolished the hotel and then built the 9 houses, you're actually $100,000 to $200,000 underwater. Like, you couldn't make any money. So no wonder it hadn't sold. So the value in this deal, and the question you've asked, you've put yourselves in the position of a lot of our audience, actually. So well done, because I get asked this question whenever I present on this deal. People always say to me, yeah, but how are you going to finance the purchase, or how are you going to get lending on it, which is exactly what you've asked. The key here is we make just over £3,500 a month. Every single month. Now, obviously, occupancy goes up and down on the hotel, etc., but around £3,500 a month. And it's a 15-year agreement. Now, we've not bought it because it's a control now, pay later. We've actually exchanged contracts on it. We've got a fixed date in the future when we need to buy it. And we're paying a monthly amount, as I say in the episode itself, £2,500 a month to the landlord, and now the landlord's children. So if the property goes up in value, and 15 years is plenty of time for a property cycle, you'd hope for a complete property cycle in 15 years. So if it's worth $350 today, what would we hope it'd be worth? Well, one property cycle, properties double every cycle, it could well be worth $700,000. That'd be great, because at the point at which it's worth $700,000, we only have to pay the vendors $450,000. Can we get lending at $450,000 on a $700,000 property? Absolutely, we can. And then people, this is the follow-up question people ask, is, well, what if it doesn't go up to $700,000? And of course, there's no guarantees. So if it only goes up to 500, what are our options? Well, you'll know, Ian, that if it only goes up to 500, we can just sell it. So we owe them 450 in 15 years' time. And obviously, it's a few years old, the deal now. So it's in about 10 years' time. I think we've had it about 5 years. But if it only goes up by a little bit above the 450, then it's a transferable exchange of contracts. So we can just sell the property to a third-party buyer. The vendors get the 450 and we make 50K. Well, that's not bad. If we've made 3.5 grand a month, every single month for 15 years, no money down, other than the works we've done to add the rooms. And then we make 50 grand at the end. That still strikes me as a decent deal. And then the follow-up question is, yeah, but what if it doesn't go up to even 450? Now, we're getting into the realms of unlikelihood, in my opinion. You know, show me a property that was worth 350 15 years ago that's not worth 450 today. You'd struggle. They do exist. You'd find them in the UK, but without anything else changing, it hasn't gone up by, as you say, a third. For a property not to go up by 35, 40% in 15 years is very, very unlikely. But if it doesn't, let's take an extreme example and say it doesn't go up at all. So it's only at 350,000. Now, you'd be hard pressed to find a property that dropped in value over 15 years. So let's say it stays at 350. Well, we have made £3,500 every single month. So on an annual basis, that's £42,000. But we've actually done that for 15 years. That's £630,000. So if we're worried about the property not going up in value, we can just put that in a separate bank account. And now, does it matter if the property is only worth 350? No, because we've got 630 in the bank. We can just add 100 to it. Or if the property drops in value, it doesn't matter. In fact, the property can be worth zero in 15 years and we've still got 630 in the bank. We can give the vendors 450. We've got the balance in our pocket. What's that, 180 in our pocket? And we're walking away with a property that's still making us 3,500 a month. So I was actually interviewing one of our newest partners, Brenda, recently, and we were having the conversation that EPP is actually a very safe way of investing in property. We're actually quite cautious. And I think, Ian, it looks like we're taking a gamble, paying 35, 40% above market value, but actually we're being very safe. I would say it's impossible for us to lose money on this deal. So does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah, it answers my question. It just was more for the people listening because it was a big lift over 350 or 100,000 above. I'd really sort of figured out in my mind how you were working that out. You say you added an extra 10 rooms onto the property. At this stage, you still don't own the property. Mm. Obviously, you were able to get some legal support to make sure that you kept the authority over those 10 properties, but you wouldn't have been able to get any funding, were you, to be able to put 10 properties onto it?
Correct. We weren't able to get funding at all, actually. You've kind of asked two questions there. One was, how did we protect ourselves legally? And the second was, did we get funding? So the answer to the first one is the vendor used their own lawyers when we did the deal. We made sure the deal was rock solid in terms of the legal. So they had their own independent legal advice. It's an exchange of contracts, so it's rock solid. I had no qualms about spending the money we spent. We spent £100,000 on the conversion from 18 to 28 bedrooms. So the first question is, yes, we're rock solid. Even though the vendors passed away and we're now dealing with the children, it's still rock solid. The second question that you ask is, did we get funding? No, we didn't get conventional funding, but we did take funding from private investors. So we put £100,000 into it, but none of it was actually our own money. And the way we did that is we are paying those investors 5% on their money. I think we did it on a 3-year loan period. So a 3-year loan, I think, if memory serves me. But because the building existed, the fabric of the building was there, it was an old fashioned hotel. So there was a big bar with like a function room, like a dance floor and stuff. And then there was a separate dining room. It was huge. You had a commercial sized kitchen. So there was loads of internal space that wasn't generating any money for us because we weren't operating the bar. We weren't cooking for anyone. It's a self-catering hotel. And so what we looked at was, how can we carve up all these dead spaces as economically as possible? And we got the architect involved. We didn't add a single external wall.
So everything we did was within the existing footprint of the building. And that just made it incredibly cheap. And it made it really easy to get planning permission as well, because all, I think you won't believe this, when we put in for planning permission to add 10 bedrooms, I think the planning permission only included 4 windows. That's all, like when you look to the external, are they profiles they're called in?
Envelope.
Yeah, so when those drawings were made by the architect, the planners actually came back to us and said, sorry, what changes are you making? He said, no, we're not changing anything. We're just putting a few more extra, because obviously every bedroom needs a window. So we just put en suites back to back. All of these bedrooms were en suite. We put those back to back, which made it really easy. We used existing windows wherever we could. And then we added four windows. So six rooms had existing windows. We obviously had to put some corridors down there. So if you imagine it, you've got, a function room with windows on both sides. We put a corridor down the middle and split it into 4 rooms, for example. Now, those rooms on average, we didn't split it into per room cost about £10,000. So 100K for the 10 rooms, some were a bit more, some were a bit less. But then if you consider that we were making an extra £430 per room, that's what they were letting out for, that's a 23-month payback period.
Yeah.
And so we were paying 5% on the loan. So each year we were paying 5% interest. Well, that's easy over 10 rooms. So what are we looking at? 430 times 10. So we're making £4,300 a month. So covering that £5,000 a year interest is really easy. And then if we're paying it back over 23, 24 months, the loan is done and dusted within the 3 years. So actually, it's cost us no money up front. We've paid the entire loan off within 3 years. And then it's just an extra £4,300 a month profit for the rest of the deal, for the next 12 years. So that's why it was a no-brainer and a safe way of doing it, even though it looks like we're risking 100K. And to be honest, even if it wasn't someone else's money, if it wasn't finance investment, if we were using our own money. Now, just to be clear, it was unsecured finance investment because we couldn't get any security on the property because it wasn't ours.
Yeah.
Actually, we could have potentially gone to the vendor and said, please, will you allow a charge on this property because we want to improve it. I actually don't think they would have gone for it, but some vendors perhaps would have gone for it. So that would have been an option. But no, we took unsecured lending and did the works. I would have been quite happy putting my own money in on a 24-month payback period, given that I then got 13 years of profit. So it's about weighing up those pros and cons, but that's how we did it, mate.
Just pitch to the people that are listening to this. There's opportunities like that to serve with every APP partner, and even with over here in Northern Ireland where I am. We're always looking for opportunities with people who've got money in the bank and not making anything on it. We've always got opportunities. And because we're part of the APP group, we do everything in a transparent way, which is most important. I've even got people who have funded deals of mine where we're going in to do a big refurb, and we've been able to buy the property, but maybe we've got 100 grand. We need, like Frank did there, to do a refurb, and it's not that you can't borrow the money; it's the amount of paperwork that needs filled out nowadays, and we've always got opportunities. So if you've got a few pounds in the bank and you'd like to get a lot more than what you're getting for it, we can certainly help.
We're always looking for finance investment, and the long and short of it, Ian, is it's a win-win. So I've got a JV partner at the moment. It's actually one of the England and Wales partners, and they've just created access to their pensions. They've just moved their pension into a SAS and are wanting it to work for them. And I went to them and I said, look, I've got this property, I've not done anything to it for 5 years, I've just let it out as a beat up HMO, but it lends itself perfectly to 4 flats. Would you like to use your pension to pay for the property? I think they're paying half upfront for the property to give me some cash now. They're then doing the works while I own the property, and in terms of splitting it into 4 flats. And then they're going to buy it from me as 5 titles, freehold plus 4 flats, and get all the refinance on that. They'll actually get all of their pension money out of the property by the time they refinance. So they'll have a no money down deal. I'll still have half of the deal. I'll have half of the equity, half of the cash flow moving forwards. They'll have no money left in the deal. So they've got half of 4 flats for no money left in within 12 months. That's a brilliant win for them. And they're using that money. So I think they're putting in 80 odd for the purchase and then 60 odd for the works. So they're using 140 grand for probably 9 months, maybe 12. And then they're getting it all back out. And all of a sudden they've got half of four flats and they're rocking and rolling. And I've turned a beat up HMO into half of four flats. I've lost half of them, obviously, but I've not used any of my money. They've done the refurb. They're managing them moving forwards. And I've got a new JV partner. And that's the nature of sophisticated investing, Ian. I completely agree. It's I've got an opportunity there, but I don't really want to spend a load of time and a load of money monetizing it. They've got the time and the money and I've got the property. So let's do it together and we'll have half of the pie each. And I think it's a good point. If the deal's good enough, there's always money there. And I think people forget that sometimes. So thanks for reminding us.
Not only that, the people that have the opportunity then to learn in the whole process, you know, and somebody who maybe is a little bit skeptical about getting into property, you know, this is a great way to enter and to be coached live by someone of our caliber, where we've done this many times before, and at the end of the project, they can see, well, this works.
Exactly. And that was something I said to them. I said, you're going to do all the, if you agree to the JV, you'll be responsible for all the work. You'll be doing all the site visits. You'll be ordering all the materials. You'll be overseeing the building company, etc. But I will help you in writing the schedule of works. I'll proof it. I'll approve it. I'll help you in picking the appropriate agreement for this particular development. It's right on the cusp of one agreement and another one. And I'll also do a site visit with you once a week to help you. They've never done a title split before, so it'll be a big step up from the refurbs. And you're absolutely right. That's a big return for them, because then on the next deal, they know they can do this size of development on their own. So it's a win-win.
So I think that my point would be to let the people know more that we're doing this nearly every day of the week.
Hmm.
You know, because you positioned this as this project with a hotel, and people might say, well, they don't come along very often. Do you want to sort of expand on how many opportunities we get to look at the like of this thing?
Yeah, In fact, I've got to the point where I won't accept, I won't look at a deal if it's emailed to me. I was getting so many. So now if anyone wants to propose a deal to me, they have to phone me. And straight away, people don't phone me because I ask the same questions over and over. How much time have you spent with the vendor? Well, this has just been emailed. Oh, so hang on, have you not even spoken to the vendor? Okay, I'm not interested. And it sounds really harsh, but unless we have a direct line of communication with the vendor, it's not going to come to fruition.
Yeah, of course.
So even though I've cut down probably by 90% the deals that I get offered now, I don't spend time wasted on deals that aren't deals, you know, opportunities that don't really exist. Of those ones, loads, Ian. So what have we got going through at the moment? We've got a 33-bedroom residential home on the East Coast, Norfolk kind of area, somewhere over there. We've got 10 flats that we're negotiating on in Barnstable, Devon. We've got a few commercial deals going through at the moment. A lot, basically, mate. And when you're in that position of abundance, when you've got deals going through, oh, just remember, we got HMO that we're about to exchange on in Lancashire. That's quite a large singular building, so I think it's a 5-6 bedroom HMO. When you have all these opportunities and they're all at various stages, from initial offer to head to terms agreed to legals instructed to exchange of contracts to completion, you know, wherever they are, it gives you that feeling of abundance. So if a vendor says, you know what, early doors in the negotiations, I'm not interested, or I want it to be a better deal, and you've already offered your best deal, it's very easy to say no problem at all. Our business model is not for everyone. Feel free to come back if anything changes. And that, it sounds quite harsh and hard, but it's very clear professionally then that this isn't a negotiation. This is a, here's the best we can do. Having listened to you, it sounds like a good balance. It sounds like it ticks all your boxes. It solves your problem. It might not be, you know, what you hoped for, but it does get you out of the property problem that you're currently in. And this works for us. And so if you're in that position of abundance, it becomes a lot easier to negotiate on these. And some of the partners, Ian, if you look at partners, they've done, you know, one deal a year for a few years, or maybe one deal every 5 years for a few years. And then they join EPP and they times that by sometimes 4, sometimes 5, sometimes 10. You know, we've got partners doing 10, 12 deals a year. And that's just because they are no longer wasting their time with properties that are on the open market. If you're going to try and find sophisticated deals on the open market, you better live for 1,000 years because they are so few and far between. Now, a lot of the deals we do are on the open market, but the problem is that for every one we do that's on the open market, there's 999 that are not deals that are on the open market. So the key is to find these properties direct with the vendor. And once you're marketing direct to vendor, and people get put off because it's expensive and it's time consuming, but once you are marketing direct to vendor, that's when you get into a position of abundance with these deals.
Thank you. I think it's been good to get the opportunity to ask you a few questions. I'm sure they've been in the minds of others, and I'll just hand back to you to close up.
Thanks, Mr. Jackson. Appreciate it. Yeah. Hope you enjoyed this episode, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. If you think this podcast would be of benefit to other people, then please do share the episode and the channel with others. We're looking to grow the channel, and it's fantastic if you can do that. If you want any information at all, you can go to ethicalpropertypartners.com and find out about EPP. You can see previous episodes there. You can comment on these. Do check out our YouTube channel, where you also can see a lot of our videos that don't make it onto the podcast. Until next time, guys, happy investing.
That was the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast from Ethical Property Partners. Use your podcast app to follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode.